makes it cooler.
Sounds like it definitely does sound like we are. Well, I was about to say something real dumb. It sounds like we're in the backyard of a house. Well, we are. Yeah.
All right.
All right.
And we're back.
Welcome back to another episode of It's All Bad. This is Charlie. We got Russian Danny, Mike. Yo, yo.
Hey.
Keith.
Hey.
We're going to do another episode of Bios, we're calling it.
Yep.
Charlie's back with us yet again.
I'm back. I think this week we can get to know Uncle Mike a little bit better.
Yeah. I was afraid of that. No, that's good. Let's talk.
Here we go.
I'll answer any question you ask me.
An East Coast boy.
That's true. East Coast boy. Rhode Island.
What was that like?
Small. No, it was great. I mean, Rhode Island's a great place to grow up. You know, no doubt. I think I probably would have gotten myself into trouble earlier. But no, it was good if I'd been somewhere else. But was that me? God damn it. Hold on. I'm going to take that over.
Yeah, 6 minutes, Dougie Fresh, you're wrong.
What's that?
What? No. What was
that? I said, 6 minutes, Dougie Fresh, you're wrong.
No, growing up in Maryland was good. It's a really, really, like... It's a very pretty place. You know, there was a lot of, like, I never worried about simple stuff like safety and stuff like that. Like, it wasn't a big city. We lived in, I lived in the suburbs. I lived in Cranston. I lived in East Greenwich, Rhode Island. And then eventually my family moved to Jamestown, which is an island between basically the mainland and Newport.
It's an island.
Yeah, it's an island. But, I mean, it's got bridges.
Yeah, okay.
But it's got... But it is technically an island. Yeah, Connecticut Island. And I liked it, you know. I mean, whatever. By the time I was 16, I was like, I got to get the fuck out of here. But that was really just because I was interested in other stuff. And that stuff wasn't really there, you know.
What was that?
I don't know. I think initially I knew that when I went to school, well, I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I went to school, but I was very much had my head down all through high school and was like very much part of that mission, which is of the sort of, you know, third generation of like my grandfather went to college, you know, my dad was a professional guy, went to medical school and da da da. And I think there was, you know, it was the 80s. I don't know. I always felt I was obsessed with New York City for a minute, of course, as I think a lot of East Coast kids are from New England. And I just was like, I just sensed that the stuff I was interested in wasn't going to happen there. I got obsessed with movies really early. I got obsessed with fashion really early. I got to be honest, like if there was anything that really drove me more, it was like, at one point in college, I was like, I think I want to design clothes. And
really? It wasn't acting necessarily?
No, it wasn't. Not initially. And no, it wasn't. And in fact, it was not as social as that. I was like, I think I want to make design clothes. I think maybe I should leave Brown to go to a clothes place. You know, my dad was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you're going to be a homeless person. And he was probably right. And, you know, but in that mentality of just like, that was kind of how it went. You know, it was very, East Coast is a different place, you know, than the West. And it is mired in traditions that at least at that time, like, you know, I'm 50 now, so it's, you know, that was enough time ago that it was, you know, I was educated in a pretty traditional way. And it was like, okay, you go get a profession. You go, you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, you're a businessman. You do something that's going to be prudent and smart and and not like, and again, also it's like my parents, my family, like I grew up well off, but there's a very big difference between well off and rich. And well off means you get paid really, really well for your profession and you make a very good living. But the moment you stop working, money doesn't just keep flowing in from some other place.
Right.
When that starts coming in from some other place, then that's another level in that takes multiple generations of wealth to generate that kind of a thing, right? So it's very easy as people, you know, to sort of think those things. And part of that is like, all right, well, the next thing is profession. And so I definitely felt an obligation towards that. And I was like, well, maybe I'll go into international politics or international relations. I didn't know. I tried journalism for a minute, and that was interesting. But then I was like, most of these people just have cigarettes and coffee breath, and it's a bummer. you go to a small city newspaper, and you're just like, there's nothing interesting about being here. Like, there just wasn't for me. And so, you know, whatever. Then in college, I was like, okay, I think I want to go into that. And then, you know, that seemed kind of crazy. And then acting kind of didn't seem so crazy. And it was something I could do self-contained, stay at school and still do acting. You know, it wasn't like me upending my life.
Right.
And then I went and started doing it. And I was good at it, you know, and you could study it there. And so I just kind of kept on in that vein, you know.
At college.
Yeah. And then kind of at some point, my brain just broke.
Wait, were you studying? Like, were you majoring in? Or did you have like a career thing for your parents?
No, I was majoring. I think I did declare a major in theater at some point, but I think more than anything, I wound up leaving there. I guess I was trying to complete an art semiotics major. That's a very, you know.
Art semiotics. Danny and I were thinking about taking that same class. Yeah.
It's the closest thing that school had to a film major, right? So anyway, okay, whatever. All this shit's tedious. But the fact that, I guess the part about it's interesting is that by the time I was like my sophomore year, my brain broke. And all these little symptoms of stuff that I had when I was a young kid, like 14, 15, 16, coming up like, oh, he's got to have the closet closed. Oh, I used to put the left shoe in front of the right shoe. And the next thing you know, I'm in a house on the east side of Providence in the middle of school at this Ivy League school. And this is everything that my parents have ever wanted. This is everything I've ever wanted. Like, yeah. I'm like, I'm not fighting this shit. You know, I'm buffing penny loafers and you know, and tucking in my Oxford just like every other good boy trying to do the right thing. But my brain broke, and I was like, found myself standing in my bedroom, like holding my toothbrush and like counting to 18 in cycles of eight, because 18 represented a number of like, of being like perfectly healthy. That was like, that was one of my best achievement years. And eight was a good number because it was off of 18. And also knowing that like, what the fuck's going on here? This wasn't happening just a couple of years ago. Like, all right, listen, I get it. Junior year was a little bit with the shoes in the closet, but that didn't get in the way of me having a good time fucking making great grades, grabbing ass and having laughs, you know?
Yeah, right.
Like everything was good, you know? I had girlfriends in high school and we were having fun and everything was great and I was on a success track. And even though there were issues of whether like, nah, I want to draw pictures of clothing, and my parents were like, you should get a trade. Like, these were all things that were totally surmountable and would have, and all of a sudden I got thrown this fucking stumbling block, which was like, and there were totally hints of it, but like the noggin just revolted. And so then I was like, well, I've got a problem on my hands. And you know, I tried to deal with that. And between that and my just inner desire to be a bad person, It was a bit of a, it was a bit, you know, just innate desire to be like, oh yeah, no, I root for the villain in every movie. I, you know, like yeah. I just like whatever. I, you know, I have enough of a little bit of a demon in me, and I think that comes a bit from my, you know, Providence is an interesting place. So anyway, yeah. I you know, I had my time in and right. out of college. Let's right. just put it that way.
So,
and,
but so that's OCD you're talking about?
Yeah, obsessive compulsive.
Were you diagnosed with it then, or was
I
it later?
I had shrinks, and I would like talk to them. There was one guy that I would go talk to in his basement, and it was, you know, we would talk about things, and it was like dynamic psychotherapy. Yeah. And you're talking about things, and I'm like, yeah, no, but what I'm trying to explain to you is I'm standing in a room holding a toothbrush. You know, like I'm locking and unlocking doors like 50 times. What right. the fuck is this? And I would say so the last.
Yeah.
And so I finally hooked up with this one doc, and, you know, I was like, yeah, doc, this is not like I'm having a sad time at college. Like, oh, I don't like the food at the refectory. You know, like, I'm losing my marbles over here. Yeah. What do you think's going on? And they had no idea. And at that point, like fluoxetine, which is Prozac, hadn't been out on the market. People weren't talking about how you would treat OCD. They didn't really understand it. It's like the late 80s. And they right. still didn't really get it. And finally, I was seeing this guy and my dad. I was talking to him about my symptoms. And he's a neurologist. And he was like, I got to say, like, those sound like this. You know, he's like, I'm going to come with you to one of these meetings. And he talked and he brought it up to the guy, and he's like, do you think this is possible? And the guy's, oh, well that could be possible. And it was like, all right, bro, like, what are we doing? You know? And so eventually, years later, after struggling with it and like trying to get finally in around 03, I wound up like going to the best of the best in the country. The guy who like wrote like, yeah, the, yeah. My dad was like, you got to get this under. I mean, you know, like my old man's tough, but he's like, does
smart.
Not, he's
smart,
not
yeah.
dumb, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, you got to get this fucking under control. Like you got to yeah. deal with this. And so let's just go to the best of the best. And so the best of the
that?
Best happened to be actually at Butler Hospital in Rhode Island.
Oh,
and,
no shit.
And that dude who's wow. named Dr. I forget his first name. His last name's Rasmussen. Wrote like when you go to see a psychiatrist and there's this like MMPI, the Minnesota Multiphasic Psychiatric Exam or whatever it is, you fill out like a 50 page thing or whatever the hell it is, and he wrote that. My dad was like, yeah, that's he's one of the people who published it, like amongst you know a large group of people, but he was one of the guys. I met him and he was brilliant, and he was like, yeah, you need to see this guy, and he sent me over to UCLA. And I had a great doctor who followed me for like 2 years, and we fixed the problem.
That's great.
Yeah, no, it was fucking freeing and changed my life. But that definitely got in the way. And I think, you know, a part of that was why I, you know, sort of found myself just trying to bend my mind a bit.
Yeah.
And just see... And just to try to
take it,
and also just and to relax,
yeah, right.
the unrelenting noise that was up in there, and it was really frustrating for me, man, because I had come from a place where it was like I had achieved so much by the time I was 18. At that point, like you know, I was 16 years old. I was interviewing like Elie Wiesel. For my school newspaper. Like people are like, this is a school newspaper. What are you talking about? That's an international. So he's the most famous Holocaust survivor on the fucking planet. You know, he's like Mother
How
Teresa.
Did you get a hold of him?
I just, some teacher told me that I read the book Night that he wrote. And I was like, this is fucking dope and hardcore. And I was fascinated by it. And I was like, I want to meet this guy. And I remember I had this teacher, this little waspy twat. Who my dad wanted to slap. he literally this guy. When my dad told him his last name, he literally said to him, "He's like, oh, Faella, that's Italian, isn't it?" And my dad was like, "Oh, so and so, Sounds like a wasp name, doesn't
no
it?
No way.
Oh, yeah. Now, my dad did not give a cot, and he was like, please, dude, I'll buy you tonight. Are you kidding me? I will buy you tonight. And so we whatever. This guy said I couldn't meet him. I said, I want to meet Elie Wiesel. I'm like, this guy's amazing. And you know, this is about 3-4 years before he won the Nobel Peace Prize. And we had a correspondence at Brown. We wrote each other letters.
No way.
I shit really? You not, man. I wrote, right. like, when he won the Congressional Medal of Honor, I was like, nice job on that.
No way.
And Elie Wiesel was like, right on, thanks.
No way.
No, I swear. I swear to God, strike me dead. And then,
Dude, that is wild.
And then when he won the, and I don't have those letters. I have the book that he signed, and I have, like, the original Book of Night that I read, and I have the cassette tape recording of me interviewing him. That's yeah, wow. Which is amazing.
That's awesome.
But I don't have, and he autographed a book, The Golem. He was so sweet and such a cool guy. To me, just as a kid, like, forget, take all the politics out of it and where sure. you fall on, like, is, you know, there's he brings with him some very, very complicated political opinions, and many of them are, you know, I get where they're coming from. But just as a little kid, you know, as a 16-year-old, yeah. he treated me so with so much class and tolerated my ignorant questions. So I listened to that tape and I'm like, oh my God, dude, you are an idiot. Like, just like, you're like, is Ellie or are you looking, you know, and I'm trying so hard to be smart. And he's just like, bro, what do you talk about? But he was rad. And I went up there this prick teacher told me that I couldn't do it. You know, he said, oh, I don't think you'd probably ever be able to get in him. And I was like,
I will show you.
Yeah. And I just wrote like a very sincere letter to Boston University. He was up there as a professor at the time. And I said, I just want 20 minutes of your time. I'd love to interview you. And I did. And I brought that interview back. And the people were like, what the fuck is going on? And then I just kept it up. And I just kept interviewing, like, you know, generals and fucking weird shit.
Are you serious?
I was a weirdo. But that was
The teacher's like, you can't do that, Mike. And Mike's like, maybe you don't know about my three friends.
Yeah.
O, C, and D.
Yeah, exactly. I'll write a note. I'll write your ass a note.
I'll write it backwards and you'll need to hold it in the mirror to read it, motherfucker. Yeah, right.
But that kind of crazy was like all good. It seemed to be going all in the right direction until it wasn't. And yeah, you know, whatever. But thankfully, you know, I had good, you know, good, decent people trying to help me get in the right direction, and it all seemed to pan out.
After school, didn't you work for a politician?
Oh, that's right.
I did. I worked for the mayor of Providence, Buddy Cianci, Vincent A. Buddy Cianci Jr. From like 91 to 94. So yeah, I worked for him for 3 years, and I'd gone out to LA for like 6 months and was like lived in squalor. Lived with some dude in a room like it was a dorm, but he was a stranger. It wasn't a dorm, and we weren't on campus. We were near MacArthur Park.
Smelled like farts and coffee.
Just farts, coffee, farts and Kool-Aid, more like it. It was gnarly, dude. I used to go there in I'd go to MacArthur Park in my khakis and my like, you know, my trench coat, and just like, oh, I just finished listening to this great Smiths album. Is there anything here you got?
Come back to this, come to the tunnel, fool.
It's like, oh, man, bad choices. But... So after that little brief investigate LA, and I was like, oh, this is dope, but I'm ill-equipped, I have no money, and I don't want to, I gotta get out of here, and I'm going back to school. I went to school part-time and worked for Buddy full-time, Buddy Cianci. So yeah, and that was fun.
Did Buddy Cianci go to college?
Yeah. He went to Moses Brown, which was like my high school's number one rival, and because they were twats. And they used to call him the Buddha. And then he went to, oh God, what is it, college? He went to law school.
He was a fucking district attorney.
He was like, he was like an assistant ADA or whatever, what it was. And of course everybody knows that, you know, they made the show about him, which I guess is being made into an FX story.
Oh, it was amazing.
I talked to my
Crime Town.
Yeah, they said, I mean, it's in development, you know, and I hope that it does. It was so funny. I was talking to my mom about, she's like, I was like, I wonder who's going to play me. You know, I hope it's someone nice and hope it's charming, even if I'm not in the thing. You know, who knows if I am, but if I'm in it, you know, I hope it's someone good. And of course, just God bless her, she was just like, maybe you. And I was like, as much as I'd like to play the 21-year-old me, I don't know. I think I'm about 29 years late for that.
You're like, do we have any of Buddy's toupees sitting around that Mr. Fiala could borrow?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Main thing missing is my hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you haven't listened to Crime Town or heard of it, check it out. Max makes an appearance on it. What season is that?
It's the first season. Where they do Providence, and I'm in episode 14.
It's my favorite episode.
It's a fun one. Yeah. Thank you. 14.
It's a great fucking podcast.
It's awesome.
Man.
It's a really great podcast. Yeah. Dude, they got like 50 million downloads. 50 million of that, downloads just that first season? Of that season. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
We'll get there.
Yeah. We're just missing a couple donuts off the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a couple donuts. Yeah.
Sorry, we dropped some of those followers on the floor.
No, but part of that is honestly, like, I would have to say that experience helped shape, like, you know, Rhode Island. I would say this one thing about me is that, like, or, you know, not about me, but my personality is, like, I would have to say that Rhode Island definitely plays a factor. It's a really unique place. Everybody kind of knows each other. There's a very, very insular feeling there. And it's interesting, and there's a warmth to it, and there's an intense, it's, you know, you have, it's a very concentrated place, you know?
Yeah.
So
right.
I can't discount like where I come from.
Of course.
Yeah. As part of the way I would shape, you know, and no one can, but sometimes I'm like, God, like, it's just such a weird, whenever I go back there, I'm like, my goodness, what's going on here? You know,
it's pretty fucking magical, though.
It's all pretty weird. It's like, it's
outside
just,
of Boston.
It's just yeah, exactly. No, Matt, no. We don't speak of Boston.
And then you made your way out here full time.
I came out here in 1994. I started acting. I did that for about 10 years and worked, you know, PA jobs and whatever, just like, you know, bullshit show business jobs and worked in post-production, you know, and just went out and grinded trying to get acting jobs. And I got a few handfuls of them, and that was great. But still was no way to make a real, real living. And I always had a night job, you know, I was working post-production at night. And then eventually I was like, I can't have a night job. I can't have that job anymore. I can't. And I was losing my mind. My agent dropped me. My full-time agent dropped me. My theatrical agent had dropped me. My commercial agency had dropped me. And I was like, fuck me. What am I doing? You know? And then I got a call from one of my oldest friends about going to work for a startup company that was, you know, trying to revolutionize the way advertising is created, bought, and sold. That was their shtick, and they were like, they're looking for. I directed a short, you know, and I had gone to fucking festivals, and they had been, it had been super sick. Went to Tribeca. Yeah, and France. I went to Clermont-Ferrand in France, and like, you know, shipped this fucking, you know, thing around, and I was attached to direct a feature, and then that. You know, after 2 years, I was like, well, it doesn't seem like this is going on. And I know that's, you know, people will go 10 years, but when you know, you know, yeah. It ain't like that shit's on IMDb. And every once in a while I check and I'm like, yeah, all right, it's done. That was a turd, you know, but like, you know, at that point I was like, okay. And I just needed to work, and I got this, I needed to get paid to be a creative person. Because I just hadn't been able to make that connection at that point, you know, and a buddy told me that, and I went over there and I started as a fucking copywriter and a director, and I wound up leaving as a creative director, and 3-4 years later, and then there you go, and now I'm here.
Nice.
How was your decision making during those periods? Would you say? Because that's where most of these stories come from.
Yeah. Work-wise was strong. Like, yeah. I was on point. I was working 80-hour bare weeks. I was making some pretty mental patient decisions off the clock. I definitely was not being mindful of my, like, health or my, you know. Mike has his likes. I mean, that's a thing, you know. Like, at that point, it was also the first time I'd hadn't made any money, really, right. You know. And I was making some decent money. And then, you know, that combination of me making decent money and then, like, knowing that the company that I was working for was entirely full of shit, was total advertising hummer. You know, like, I was like, this is not real advertising.
Is that company gone now?
Totally gone. Yeah. After those pricks took $50 million with them. Which is incredible. Just damn. Like, oh, well, awesome. That's what a pump and dump scheme is. Yeah. Sweet action. but yeah, I would say that, through that period, there was a little period of, like, getting dangerous again.
Yeah.
Let's just say I had a lot of guests over the house. I mean, you know,
tonight's guest,
Michelle.
Yeah.
And she's a runaway. it was bad behavior, but it was kind of the wrap up on it.
Right.
I started staring down. I was staring down 40 at that point, and I was like, "All right, this doesn't start to end well. Like, motherfuckers who keep up bad behavior like this deep into their 40 die.
Yeah,
you know, they just die, and like not even like hard dudes, like just soft country club fucking drunks, you know, who just like you keep doing some blow, you keep doing that stuff, and one day you're in the ER and one day it doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. You know? Right. And I was like, I saw that shit happening, or you get the big casino and fucking doctor's like, good luck. Sorry, you shouldn't pour so much cocaine through your fucking through your kidneys every morning. And you know, it was fun for a second. It was a little bit of a bump, but it was also, it's always what I told myself. I knew at the time when I was at the height of OCD, still fucking cracking my agates, you know, late 90s. But I, you know, my acting career still had like potential. I was still in the conversation about things. Yeah. You fucking cunt. Whatever you are, hope you fall out of the sky. No, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't mean that. I don't mean that. That's terrible. Don't put that shit on me if you do. But yeah, at that point, like, you know, when I thought that those things were still all viable, if someone had brought me, like, you know, a salary like I'd made at that place at that time, like, forget it. You know, like, it would just be, we wouldn't be having this conversation. There's just no way,
right.
You know. I was like, hey, you know, I was just one of those people who, you know, you'd hear, I'd read stories about Don Simpson and be like, that guy sounds pretty red. You know, like Bob Evans, you know, all those people, they're like, all the worst of the worst were always my heroes because, I don't know, because they're more fun. They're more fun. So it's lucky it worked out the way it did in the end of the day, you know, and it's lucky now that, like, at least where I feel like I'm at my most creatively productive and like the most, like, that I'm actually pretty normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here we are to hear all your fucked up stories.
All the wacky tales of the past. The wacky
tales. Don't be glib, Charlie.
Yes, true. No,
share them with the world.
Tales. These are the tales. These are the tales that we tell so well.
It was all bad.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was all bad.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing, Mike.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Mike.
Hey, thanks for listening. Don't forget to go to Instagram, follow us on Instagram, subscribe to our podcast, please, and we'll bring you some more stories. Thanks.